decades long, Rover.
80 is a good time. Now we've got our special
Craig Isherwood from the Citizens of Electoral Council of Australia, all the way down from Melbourne. Craig, can you hear us, mate?
Yes, I can. Thanks, Jack.
Craig?
Yeah.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. Thanks, Jack. Yep, I'm good.
Cool. Craig, look, we've got a lot of issues at the moment, the world has, and the Citizens of Electoral Council of Australia is very interesting. You can get it on the paper or you can get it on the website as well. There's so much information, Craig, it's crazy. I like to read, because I read all different types of alternative news and also the Main Street fodder as well.
Yeah.
Which helps sort of like balances everything out, because you need them, because these people get paid, these journalists. But you guys, with your paper, just out of curiosity, you guys are the journalists and you do it yourself.
Yes, we do, Jack. I started the New Citizen back in 1988.
Yep.
And ever since then, we've been sort of like the voice of the issues that haven't been talked about in the mainstream press.
Yeah.
And all our material is researched thoroughly by ourselves, written by ourselves, and we produce it ourselves. So it's we spread that out throughout Australia, through our network of supporters. Being a political party here in Australia, we have lots of supporters, so
yeah.
We send that out as our main means of communication. And, you know, when you're talking about this information age, there is a lot of information out of it. There's a lot of stuff on the internet, and there's a lot of stuff in books. You sort of have to make sense of how the world works, because otherwise you just go stark raving mad.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, they take their news, you might say, or develop their opinions from the public news available, which is a major source of control for the populations today. And you've seen recently a Senate inquiry into News Limited here in Australia. You've seen the phone tapping problems in the United States with News Limited. I mean, they unashamedly, these large media outlets unashamedly control politics in various countries that they're in. So when you have to have an alternative voice, the only way you can do that is actually to have your own paper, newspaper, to get your own ideas out. And we've been doing this for now, over 20 years. So we've produced millions of papers and we've covered a multitude of issues. I think the most popular ones, in the sense of really striking a chord, was the 2007 edition we put out, where global warming was a fraud. Now, we produced 540,000 New Citizens. Now, it was only a four-pager, but, man, that went everywhere. And this was at a time, just as when Al Gore was coming out here and trumpeted as the guru. This is the guy that spends $30,000 a month or a quarter, whatever, for hitting a swimming pool, to say the least. But yeah, he came out. There was no institutional opposition to the fraud of global warming in this country. So we set about actually creating that, and it took a while. But with those 540,000 and other things that we did,
well, everyone sort of jumped on to because of his Academy Award winning status, and also there was a guy called Tim Flannery, who released the book out. Now they virtually had the public in a situation of a scaremongering of polar bears in the summertime on ice blocks. Also, the hockey stick sort of thing. Harewood is a massive campaigner for against the... and he hates to be called a denier. He gets really upset. But for a person who is... Jimmy, are you actually... Do you believe in global warming?
No, not really.
Well, that's what I didn't want. I want to have Craig to argue with someone.
Okay. No. There's another way. There's another way out of this, right? There's another way out of this. I may not believe totally in global warming, but I like air to breathe.
Right.
It seems to work.
Yes.
Now, if they keep pushing the global change and the way we're polluting, we're going to be in a lot of trouble, because the air won't be there to breathe in the form we need it.
I think global pollution has always been a problem, in the sense of, the large multinational corporations will try and dump whatever they can as cheaply as they possibly can. In fact, they're some of the worst polluters, and have been, particularly in the 80s period that you were talking about, prior to coming into air. But the whole fraud of the global warming debate hasn't got anything to do with the actual science of global warming. It has to do with population reduction. And the intention is to reduce the world's population by those pushing this fraud down to below 1 billion people. Now, that's a bit of a shocking thing. How do you get from 7 billion down to below 1 billion. Well, you shut off science, and what you find is a lot of the very good scientists that have got the research done don't get funding as part of this political move for population reduction. And in this country, you know, it becomes hysterical. I mean, you become a heretic if you even dare question the issue of the science behind global warming, because, you know, what they come back and say is, oh, the science is settled. Tim Flannery says, oh, the science is settled. Tim Flannery is a guy in 1994 at the Australian Academy of Sciences, stood up and said, Australia has a carrying capacity of 6 to 7 million people. Now, he didn't like it when we got onto that back in 1994, and that hasn't been saying that sort of thing very recently because he's been smashed on it. But this is actual intention. You had Hans Schellenhuber down here attend the Melbourne University, where a very famous intervention happened by Glenn Ishwood. So my son is part of the young people's movement we have. Schellenhuber, you know, is a guy that actually came out, knighted by the Queen, by the way, who came out and promoted the fact that the world can only carry below 1 billion people. So what you've had actually since the post-war period, and this is what the sound our latest New Citizen's about, you know, the British Crown, defeat the British Crown's green fascist dictatorship. Now, this is a 52-page paper. It's available to people. If they'd like a copy, then call our 1-800 number, which I'll just give now. It's 1-800-636-432. But that's 1-800-636-432. We go through that paper and irrefutably have researched the background about how this whole environmentalist green movement started, where it came from, who's been pushing it. And what people don't realise is that, for example, the Nazi fascists of Germany were actually created and established out of the green movements that happened in the 20s and 30s in Germany and those surrounding areas. It's the same thing has happened today. When I talk about fascism, I'm not using that as a glib term. What I'm talking about is this move to cut out the ability to support human life, support people, to develop science and technology, and to literally smash anyone that's got any opposing view. Now, that's what I mean by fascism. And you see, you know, the police state laws that Howard brought in the 2000, the 2001 period, he brought in something like 18 to 20 police state laws that were absolute fascism. And there's been a change in our country over the last 10 years where you've had more and more, you know, more and more regulation to...
Well, that's with the Terrorist Act.
Yes.
The Terrorist Act and the Patriot Act is, I think, after 9/11, it was a nice little... I think the Homeland Security was off and ready and going. I think they failed during the 90s, I think that was.
Yeah.
Until 9/11 happened, they had their police state already done. Harold, you know more about this.
The question to Craig is Harold from Truth News.
Yes, Truth.
Look, would you be able to elaborate a bit more on the connection of the Nazis with the environmental movement? Because I did a bit of research on this myself recently, and I was pretty amazed at what I found on the internet, and there's some books on it. But whenever I bring this up with people, I usually get scoffed at because they think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that the Nazis were very strong environmentalists.
Yes.
I mean, can you actually elaborate on that a bit more?
Well, in the 1990s and 20s and 30s, you had these movements called green shirts, actually. And they were used as the battering ram to, Hitler himself was failing at one particular point, 1933, 34. He was actually failing. The whole movement was failing. It wasn't until large amounts of money came in through Montague Norman from the Bank of England and George Bush's grandfather that actually funded Hitler into power. Now, he had to have a base, right? So they used a populist base, which was in the environmentalist movement. But these Nazis had no intention of saving the environment. Or, you know, they were just using it as a political forum in order to gain power. And this had the endorsement and the backing of the City of London. A lot of the, you know, you remember the issue of the King Edward the VI, I think it was? It was King Edward the VIII. I can't remember which one. God, get me Edwards mixed up. But he had to abdicate. Leave the throne because he was actually a Nazi sympathiser.
Right.
So you had this very strong thrust through the British crown in particular supporting the Nazis. This is not an unknown thing. This was quite a popular thing.
Well, Prince Philip is involved. A lot of Prince Philip stuff is involved. The Windsor family are, what are they, Saxburg? They're German.
Saxburg.
Yes. And we got pictures of, you know, Prince Philip marching in a Nazi rally going back in, you know, in the past, in the 1930s. which is really quite stunning when you see it. But the point is that once Hitler was defeated, and he was defeated by the United States, it wasn't a fascist nation coming into the war, in effect, because of the tons of military logistics as opposed to the kilos of of military logistics of the Germans. Now, once they got past the war and people discovered what Hitler actually represent as a eugenics movement, population control basically and foremost, then eugenics and took on a bad name. So they changed the word eugenics into environmentalism. And from that point, you had the foundation, for example, of the World Wildlife Fund by Prince Philip, who was, of course, from those Nazi roots. You had Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who was actually a member of the Nazi Party, and Julian Huxley. Now, they started the World Wildlife Fund specifically, again, to push the agenda of eugenics. And now that's coming down here. Tasmania, actually, in Australia, was used as the battering ram to push through the development of radical environmentalism, and Prince Philip himself oversaw the formation personally of the Australian Conservation Foundation and also led the splits that happened in the early environmentalist movement between, pretty harmless bushwalking groups and so forth turning into more radical greeny groups. And ever since that period, you've had the Australian Conservation Foundation and World Wildlife Fund internationally pushing these rabid policies of population control, and this is the directionality that has pushed this fascism in this country to the point today that we've got a carbon tax. Now, that didn't happen out of nowhere. That happened because this is a policy that's been pushed top-down by the British Crown, and it's no accident that the Queen, she's been out here, she must have patted Julia on the back and said, good work, girl, now do some more.
All right. Hey, Craig, we're going to go into a song.
Yes,
mate. Our listeners are listening.
Yep.
We'll come back and we're going to talk more about this green fascism. I was witness to the 80s with a lot of greenies.
Right.
In the region. I'll give you a call. We'll be back. We'll be song. Back in a sec. This is Ben Harper. How many miles?
Exactly how much do I have to run? It's Ben Harper there. How many miles must we march? You listen to Workers Radio. It's about 12 minutes to 8 o'clock. We're talking
about Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. I call them the LaRouches.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Actually, yeah, just give us a quick thing on LaRouche.
Who is Lyndon LaRouche?
Well, Lyndon LaRouche is a physical economist and a scientist who's 89 years of age, actually. He's been in the political life of America for the last 60 years. And it represents the old tradition of the Americas, not the imperial view that you see now with Barack Obama going around the world trying to establish military bases and provoke China. But he represents the old, what's called the American system of political economy, which again has been smashed. This is against globalization and the necessity of promotion to promote nation states. So I met Mr. LaRouche in the 1980s, discovered his philosophical methods of promoting the need for sovereignty in nation states, and uniquely brought that back to Australia and started Australian political party based upon his ideas, and we've been collaborating very closely with Mr. LaRouche ever since, and hence we're called LaRouches, which is fine by me.
Jimmy, you wanted to say something about the LaRouche.
Not the first statement I'm going to make is going back to what you were talking about. Cambridge University in the 80s, they had a study going to see if the king, what's his name there, who abdicated, I lose count of the numbers, but the king was actually had the parameters to be brought to trial for treason, but brought to trial for many other offenses, and they found that they were 93% sure that they could get him convicted.
That's correct. I mean, because he was actually collaborating with the Nazis. He was a Nazi sympathizer.
Yeah.
And that was publicly known. So he ended up abdicating and leaving, because it was very embarrassing at that point, because you can't have the King of England, openly promoting fascism when Hitler is actually turned against Britain at that time. And that's why he ended up getting dumped. And
they sent him to the Caribbean.
Yeah, well, they got rid of him anyway. That's sort of the point. But coming back into this this green fascism here in Australia, I think this is the sword that's being used today to destroy our country and to really shut down any real development. And I think I was talking about the World Wildlife Fund and the Australian Conservation Foundation. Well, it really got launched in Tasmania back in the 70s.
Oh, in the 70s. I remember in the 80s when there was a lot of the Greenpeace and a lot of that happening. So it happened in the 70s.
It started in the 70s, but it really did develop into the 80s when you had the whole Franklin Dam fight. And that was an artificial fight because, look, the Tasmanian people are very much pro-development. I mean, they had one of the most magnificent hydroelectricity schemes called Tassie Hydro in the world, developed as a follow-on from the Snowy Mountain scheme. And they were very much, and they still are today, very much pro-development. But the World Wildlife Fund, through the Australian Conservation Foundation, needed a battering ram, so they used the Franklin Dam case in order to be able to promote that. And look, a lot of the so-called green protesters were actually rent-a-crowd. They were literally flown in into those protests. They were brought in from all around Australia, literally to protest on the Tasmanian soil. Now, it was Hawke overturned the whole Franklin Dam issue, but that was based upon international laws called the Ramsar Treaty.
Right.
And what Hawke did was begin to ratify the Ramsar Treaty, which today is being used to shut down Australia's food bowl called the Murray-Darling Basin. And what you hear is, oh, there's not enough water for the basin, you know, we've got to shut down the basin and, you know, divert the water from productive farms and send it down to clean out the salinity and so forth at the bottom Coorong Lakes area. Well, the Coorong Lakes are permanently salty because they built a barrage there about 40 years ago, which isn't actually the real way that these lakes used to work for a million years. So you have a complete artificial construction on the reason for why farmers should be losing their water entitlements, which is going to literally kill people because, already, you know, back in the 90s, in the 80s, Australia was building up a rice production capability, dryland rice farming, not flood irrigation, but actually they used flood irrigation, but using basically two crops per year, and they were able to feed up to 40 million people. Now, that's all being shut down on the basis of protecting wildlife, which was actually the Ramsar Treaty itself was promoted by the World Wildlife Fund. It was put into place by the International Conservation Union of Nature, ICUN, and this is again part of the global green fascism push. So, I mean, this is what our paper goes through. I mean, I'm only just skimming across the top of the, giving you the essence, but what we are saying, we've said it very plain and very clear, is that we've got the goods, how the British Crown created green fascism, and this goes back into the post-World War II period.
Now, isn't it,
what
were you going to say something, Jim?
Yeah, what I was going to say was I actually interviewed for a job with the Rice Corporation down in the river system.
River, yep.
And they were telling me, and afterwards we went out for drinks, they were telling me that it is the most efficient system that there is.
In the world.
We're doing.
But
yes.
Doesn't rice in Australia, it doesn't work because of the arid land we have?
No. I'm sorry, Craig, go ahead.
No, it's actually the opposite. That's what people think, is that, you know, they see these rice paddies in Southeast Asia full of water and they grow the rice underwater and so forth. That's true, but with the efficient irrigation processes that we use, the moisture is recycled. And the land is recycled many, many times, so you don't just get one crop of rice, you get two crops per year. And because we're using the most modern methods, the varieties of rice that we're using, doesn't harm the environment, providing you put, of course, the fertilizers back in. But the productivity per unit of land, per hectare, is much, much higher than anywhere else in the world because of our modern techniques. And so we built a whole industry on this. And
so
it's been
rice
shut down.
Are we growing in Australia, Craig?
What sort of rice?
How much? Like, what's our output?
Not very much now. It used to be enough to feed 40 million people. I don't have the figures right in front of me,
but it's decreased over the years.
Oh, look, it's just been shut down. Initially, there was reasons for drought.
Yeah.
But one of the problems that we have in the Murray-Darling Basin is that we just haven't built the infrastructure that was proposed at the end of the world, World War II. I mean, Curtin and Chifley had developed a whole post-war reconstruction scheme which included the building of the Snowy Mountain scheme and then the shifting of the Snowy Mountain scheme up into the Northern Rivers areas of Queensland into what's called the Bradfield scheme, to build the Bradfield scheme and the Dawson River scheme, which will create, take all enormous volumes of water that just flow out to sea and channel that down the inland of Australia. And with various pipes and canals, you could actually bring that into the top of the Murray-Darling Basin area. So you could supplement the flows for the Murray-Darling Basin. So there's no shortage of water in Australia, but the problem is the political will to develop this country, like we used to do, has evaporated under the pressure of globalisation, under the pressure of green fascism. They're the same issue. Both are run by the British Crown. They're just one is each side of the flip coin, you might say.
Can I just ask you about the population reduction concept again?
Yes.
Because, like, I tend to agree with you that there are elites who want population reduction. In fact, they admit it. I mean, the Billionaires Club regularly meet to discuss how can we reduce world population. So we know that they want to do this. However, the reality is that the world population continues to grow. So what I'm actually wondering is, you know, how realistic is this idea that they have of bringing the world population back down to under a billion? And do you think that it is actually likely in any foreseeable future that they will do that? I mean, I can obviously imagine one scenario is a nuclear world war. Another one would be releasing a mega virus of some kind, some absolutely lethal virus. But it is going to be really hard to bring the world population back down so drastically. It's going to take massive killing of just wars, devastation, and disease. And of course, we haven't seen that yet. So, you know, is it realistic or is it a bit overblown? I mean, I just want to be a bit, like, I want to be devil's advocate for a minute.
Yes.
And just look at it from a sceptical point of view.
That's good, Harold, because that clarifies a number of issues. You have to look at this from the top down, not from the bottom up. And the top down view is that you have this principle which exists amongst these elites that you're talking about, and particularly the British Crown, and it's called the oligarchic principle, where they believe that they have the right, they've been ordained by God, you might say, to be the rulers. And the parody for this, the story for this, is go back to the Olympian gods, where Zeus, you know, cast out Prometheus. Mm-hmm. What is Prometheus? This is actually, you know, there's some reason to believe this is actually a true story written into, folklore. But what did Prometheus do? He gave man fire. Actually, he gave man knowledge. And that was able to then, man was able to use that knowledge to control his destiny by making his lot on this planet a lot better. And that's what they fear, is that if you have a system on this earth that treats human beings as human beings are, and we're creative human beings, which means we can make the discoveries of the scientific principles that run this universe, and then apply those through technology to our economy, then we don't have a problem with feeding 7 billion people. In fact, we could feed 50 billion people, 500 billion people. We're not limited also to the face of this planet. Now, that might sound stunning, but then if you cast your mind back, think about what the world actually looked like at the turn of last century, and think about the fact that we didn't have electricity, light poles, didn't have, you know, gridded electricity, we didn't have motor cars running around, and think about the leaps in technology that have taken place in the last 100 to 110 years. Now, think about that development of our science and technology in an unfettered way into the future, and there's no reason why we can't be colonising the Moon and Mars and so forth. The point, though, is that we're up against a political, philosophical policy that Philip, Prince Philip, the Crown and others agree with, that they have the right to rule, and they have to then impose that rule, and they don't care how they do that. And that's why right now there's a very dangerous situation building up of actual thermonuclear war in the Middle East. And, you know, this is run by this nutcase called Obama, and I call him a nutcase because he has a narcissistic personality disorder. It's actually been diagnosed by, you know, some very high-profile psychiatrists.
Right, just before we go, what was it? We've got to go into the 8 o'clock news there, Craig.
Yeah.
What was that disorder that Obama has?
A narcissistic personality disorder.
Ah, geez. It sounds like a lot of politicians, and he's probably at the peak of that top there. He's around there, especially come Australia. We'll come. Listen, citizens of the Electoral Council of Australia, Craig Isherwood, thank you very much. Now, what's that number again?
It's 1-800... 636432.
Yep.
And our website has all this material on it. It's www.cecaust.com.au. And you know, what I say is all backed up. There's plenty of links there to go to other places. If people want to tap into the International Arush Organization and the Arush Pack website, we can. That's all provided on that website. So I don't want people to believe what I say.
Yep.
I would rather them go to our website, look at our material, and follow it through for themselves and make some discoveries.
Awesome, Craig. Thanks, Craig.
I will speak to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Jack Harrod.